ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Nightlife. News breakdown.
Well, opposition leader Susan Lee wants to split the Albanese government's long-awaited overhaul of environmental laws. But getting kickback on that move from some perhaps surprising sources. Susan Lee wrote to Anthony Albanese on Sunday, calling for the legislation, yet to be revealed in full, to be split in two, separating plans to speed up project approvals from proposals to strengthen environmental safeguards. Now, Environment Minister Senator Murray Watt says the legislation strikes the right balance between protecting the environment and streamlining the approvals process, and he dismissed the idea of splitting them as, quote, a silly idea. But business and industry heavyweights are also now putting pressure on the coalition to abandon its push to split the laws. Now, 5 years ago, the then Environment Minister in the Morrison government, one Susan Lee, commissioned former ACCC Chair Graham Samuels to conduct an independent review into Australia's environmental laws, conducted by Graham Samuel. That review had the support from groups all across the community, as well as Susan Lee. Well, here's what Graham Samuel said 2 days ago regarding Susan Lee's call to split the bill.
I try to be apolitical, but I've got to say to you, I'm getting frustrated and frankly a little angry about what's going on in the political scene. This review took 12 months of real hard work, not on my part, but on the part of a whole series of people in the department. We put together a review, which, and I have emails in my files, which say this is welcomed by every group in Australia, from scientists, academics, conservationists, business, miners, farmers, right across the board, bar one, the West Australian Chamber of Mines. But we'll put that aside. The Minister, Minister Lee, as it was back then and now Leader of the Opposition, knew exactly what was in the report and indicated to me that she embraced it. So I don't understand why now, all of a sudden, the report is being rejected.
The Business Council of Australia has also rejected the Coalition's push to split the bill, and they've urged Opposition Leader Susan Lee to go back to the negotiating table. Former Treasury Secretary Ken Henry regards the environment law reform as the nation's most important productivity fix. Well, joining us tonight for News Breakdown is Amy Rimikas, Chief Political Analyst with the Australia Institute. Amy, good evening to you. Welcome back to Nightlife.
Thank you for having me.
Is this simply the opposition playing politics for the sake of it?
Yeah, it's an interesting one, this one. I mean, first of all, just listening to Graham Samuel again, it's interesting hearing a bureaucrat speak on something with such passion and also frustration. It's unusual in Australian political life to hear people, even when they have authored reports, to just basically get exasperated to the point where you can actually hear it in their voice, which I think goes a long way to showing a lot of the frustration around this. And it's not necessarily that Susan Lee is playing politics just for the sake of it. Susan Lee is doing everything she can to hold the coalition together, or at least hold it together for before its inevitable end. And if she signs up to anything that has environmental protection in it at the moment, the coalition will fall apart. There's several people within the joint party room and her own party room who are ready to pull the pin and use any sort of grenade they can to pull it all apart. On the other hand, she has industry who are really pushing her to pass this legislation because it's good for them. I know that Graham Samuel was saying that it's good for both business and environment, and that's the line that Murray Watt uses as well, that it's finding the balance. But industry really wants this passed, which makes you think, well, if the industry, if the mining sector is so married to it, it can't be all that great for the government. Labor doesn't want to do negotiations with the Greens. They would prefer to do it with the coalition for exactly that reason. Susan Lee is desperately trying to look for a lifeline where she can pass the bits of legislation the industry wants, but not blow up her party room.
Yes, Australians have been waiting a long time for this reform. And as I said, business is not so happy. They're concerned about the coalition's bid to split the bill. They're concerned because they think it might drive the Environment Minister, Murray Watt, to do a deal with the Greens. Now, the opposition, however, appears to be banking on Labor not being keen to negotiate with the Greens. Liberal Senator Jane Hume says the Labor Party would be committing self-sabotage if they did. Here she is.
We would hope that the Labor government aren't that much into self-sabotage, that they would run into the arms of the Greens on this legislation. They know that should they do that, should they succumb to all of the demands of the Greens, that this will simply become unworkable legislation.
And the Greens, of course, are demanding stronger protections for the environment, and they've flagged that they want stronger climate measures, which businesses strongly oppose. This is the Greens leader, Larissa Waters.
Environmental laws that don't protect the environment aren't environmental laws. They're business facilitation laws. Now, the minister's got one job, and that's to protect nature. At the moment, he's protecting corporate interests. That's not what anybody voted for.
Where do you see this going, Amy? Is a Labor-Green deal possible?
Well, it's always possible. I mean, anything is possible in the parliament. And I do find it funny listening to Jane Hume again, that she's literally saying the quiet part out loud, which is if you do a deal with the Greens, it'll be better for environment, and Labor doesn't want to do that. But at the same time, that's kind of, you know, the pot calling the kettle black, because she does, the coalition at the moment also don't want to do a deal with Labor, not because it's bad for industry, but because they've got their own thing going on. I mean, the Greens have already tried passing these laws with Tanya Plibersek when she was environmental minister. They got to the point of agreeing to negotiations. There was a climate trigger involved. Anthony Albanese pulled that legislation at the stroke to midnight because he didn't want that sort of deal done. So we already know the parameters of what sort of deal Labor wants done on this. The Greens have said, okay, well, we need to at least look at logging and land clearing a little bit more seriously if we're going to have negotiations on this. The Labor government haven't come to the table on that yet, but if they're really, really interested in passing these laws and getting it off their books, which we know that they actually do want to do, they want to be able to speed up approvals for these projects. They're now linking it to national security in terms of the critical minerals deal that was done with Donald Trump last week. You can see that Labor would perhaps start walking towards the Greens' direction, if only to spook the coalition into acting.
All right, staying with climate change concerns, the Nationals Party review into net zero is still underway as pressure increases on the Liberal National Coalition to actually reach some sort of definitive policy decision. National Senators Matt Canavan and Ross Cadell are the reviewers of the policy. This is supposed to be informing the party's stance on the issue. Senator Canavan last week said details of the review would be presented to the party room today. But the Nationals leader, David Littleproud, says the inquiry is still ongoing.
What I've made it very clear to Matt Canavan and Ross Cadell is it's not to be rushed to the extent that we make bad decisions, that we get bad information. They've been careful making sure that they have sourced information and garnered reports that they can validate so we can get to a principal position.
More delay, Amy. It's not an easy one for the coalition. Matt Canavan was on ABC Insiders yesterday. Let's play you some of that. It's a bit longer than the usual grab, but it was interesting and revealing.
What would it cost Australia to drop the net zero target, to get rid of net zero? What's the cost?
To drop net zero. Well, there's obviously in that question, there's the cost of it. The calculation is what is the cost of getting to net zero, because the cost of dropping it is the benefit of avoiding those costs.
No, and it's really not the question. The question is, if we drop the target now, do we lose investment? Right. Do we lose opportunities? What's the cost of abandoning the target right now?
Right. Okay. Well. Sorry. I mean, you can ask the question you like. I'll answer it the way I like. It's very clear, of course, that the cost of not doing something is avoiding the costs of doing it. Right. That's pretty common sense, and we know from a group called Net Zero Australia, which is a consortium of the University of Queensland, the University of Melbourne and Princeton University, all people who support a net zero objective, may I say, they put the estimated cost of reaching net zero in Australia at $7 to $9 trillion, getting close to $300,000 per Australian. Now, that's obviously an enormous, enormous cost, and you have to wonder why we would pay that cost in just one generation, when clearly the rest of the world is not acting in that way.
But surely, Senator, you also need to know the alternative. You also need to know the alternative. And look, the Treasury's done modelling on this. They say dropping net zero risks lower economic growth, reduced investment, missed export and employment opportunities, and higher energy prices. The International Energy Agency has also warned that if policymakers and industry leaders put off action,
and spending today will end up paying more tomorrow. The National Farmers Federation says farmers' interests are at stake. We need to stick with net zero is the NFF's view. So they're all warning that there's a greater cost of dropping zero.
Well, all those people have been wrong. I don't know why we'd listen to them.
So they're all wrong.
These are the same people. Look, let's judge people. I think we should judge people on their past performance. And all of those organisations got behind modelling and said that by adopting net zero, we'd cut power prices by $275. That by adopting net zero, we'd get cheaper energy in this country. By adopting net zero, we'd attract enormous investment in critical minerals. And may I also mention hydrogen. No one mentions that anymore. But that was what we were promised just 3 and 4 years ago. So I'm not going to take being given quotes from those organisations which lack any credibility in this debate.
Yes, well, Amy, you might feel that Matt Canavan was struggling a bit here, but they're pretty likely to favour dropping net zero, aren't they? It's a strange policy position in a way, isn't it? Because not due till 2050, it's sort of signals that the coalition's not serious about climate change, or the Nats aren't serious about climate change. And in a sense, what's it got to do with the Nats right now when they should be probably taking the case to the government, shouldn't they?
Yeah, I mean, oh God, where to start? First of all, Matt Canavan is an economist, which I always find very amusing when he's making these arguments, because you can almost hear him arguing with himself. That $7 to $9 trillion amount that he mentioned there, that's an investment and it's expected to be spent over 37 years. It's not something that is just going to be Australians paying. This is people investing in new and renewable networks and new technologies and critical mineral mines in all of it. It's not just, oh, suddenly you're all going to have to pay $300,000 or whatever it was. And in terms of what the Nationals are doing, they're only playing politics for the now. And we know that the Nationals are pretty much at capacity. Maybe there's one or two more seats that they could potentially win sometime in the next decade if they still exist as a party. But they're pretty much at capacity. They will not be in government in 2050. There's not a single member of this parliament, except for maybe a couple of the young Labor ones in the Senate, who potentially could even still be in government in 2050. In terms of what this argument that the Nationals are having, Labor is going to be in government for the next election. Mathematically, it is almost, and I say almost because I try not to rule out anything comprehensively, it is almost mathematically impossible for the coalition to win the next election, which then gets us into the 2030s, by which point it's done. Labor have won this argument. We are on the path to net zero. Because all of our trading partners are on the path to net zero. Gina Rinehart is investing in critical minerals. America, despite what Trump is doing, is still maintaining a lot of their net zero transition. They're not calling it that, but they're doing the transition because that is where the money is to be made. This entire argument the Nationals are having is completely moot. It has no impact on Australian public policy. However, we are holding up the debate. You and I are talking about it right now, and the Nationals have managed to suck up a lot of oxygen with it. So in that case, it is working for them. But in terms of policy, it's not going to do anything.
No. All right. Now, staying with the Nationals for a bit and the continuing ruminations and conundrums of Barnaby Joyce. He's decided not to sit with the Nationals in Parliament, saying his relationship with leader David Littleproud is irreparably broken. But the former Deputy Prime Minister has ruled out representing his electorate of New England as an independent. A speculation runs rampant that he will defect to Pauline Hanson's One Nation. Now, pressed on whether he would meet Ms. Hanson while Parliament sits during the next fortnight, he had this to say.
I've met with Pauline Hanson. I've met with Pauline Hanson before. I mean, it's a free country. You're allowed to actually meet other people. I talk to people from the Greens. I've talked to David Shoebridge from time to time. I actually do talk to other people away from my own party.
He was also challenged by News Limited journalist Andrew Clennell in Parliament this morning as well.
I don't need for an amelioration or an amendment of this. Net zero is incredibly bad for Australia and must be got rid of.
Mr. Joyce, aren't you trying to have your cake and eat it too by saying you're a National but not being part of the team in the party room?
I don't think so at all. I think that what we've seen in the past is you've seen people such as Kevin Hogan and Darren Chester who have had a different position and sat aside. So there is, and once.
Well, how long are you going to sit aside?
Well, that's a question that Andrew, I can deal with. I'm happy for you to ask me that in the future.
Are you on the team or not? That's the question.
Andrew, I'm on.
You can't be half pregnant, Mr. George.
No, I can't be pregnant at all, Andrew. I mean, that's another discussion if you want to have it, but that's a different topic. My position is quite clear. It's been. I've thought about this for a long period of time. I've seen the suffering.
I'm not sure that his position is quite clear. But what's going to happen here? Can David Littleproud manage these antagonists? Or I mean, Barnaby's gone, isn't he, from the Nats?
Well, I mean, he wants everyone to think that. Is he actually going to take the leap only if it is absolutely beneficial to him? Because Barnaby Joyce is running politics for Barnaby Joyce. I mean, Pauline Hanson was happy to stir the pot today. She made the announcement that she's removing her name from the official party name. It will no longer be Pauline Hanson's One Nation. It'll be One Nation. And she said kind of, you know, wink, wink, it's time for renewal. It's time to look at the future of the party, knowing that immediately everyone would be like, oh my God, Barnaby Joyce might go and join One Nation, which, you know, also keeps her in the news cycle as well. I think the relationship there is pretty broken. It's been broken for some time. David Littleproud's not the, and Barnaby Joyce aren't the only broken relationship there. I mean, there's the former member for Hinkler, Keith Pitt, who had a fallout with David Littleproud. We had David Gillespie also, I think, basically be told that, you know, he didn't really have a future in the National Party, and that's why he's out as well. There is obviously some issues within the National Party. Is there enough issues to challenge David Littleproud's leadership? Obviously not, because he is still holding it. So they're just continuing to have these little battles. And again, is it going to change the numbers? Is it going to shift any votes? I don't think so.
Amy Romegas is with us. This is the News Breakdown. Look, away from Parliament, the Prime Minister sat down with China's Premier Li Qiang earlier today on the sidelines of the ASEAN meeting in Malaysia's capital, Kuala Lumpur, talking about this Chinese fighter jet releasing flares dangerously close to an Australian Air Force plane last week. It was labelled unsafe and unprofessional. Apparently, we made our feelings clear to the Chinese Premier. I mean, he's having some big meetings of late, not to juggle between Donald Trump and the Chinese. I guess making himself clear to the Chinese about the confrontations will change everything, won't it?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Everything will be solved. World peace. I mean, he said today in Kuala Lumpur in his press conference there, Anthony Albanese, that Premier Li was very well aware of Australia's feelings on the fighter jet flares and that he very strongly communicated Australia's position there. Does that change anything? I don't think it actually does. I mean, China is going to continue to push the boundaries because it can, especially as Australia continues to strengthen its strategic relationship with the United States. I mean, this flare incident happened as the meeting with Donald Trump was underway in terms of signing the critical minerals deal and getting the reinforcement for AUKUS. This is the situation that we are going to be in for the foreseeable future. I mean, China is a risk. It's not a threat as yet. And it's just making sure that everyone knows that it's there, that it's watching, and that it can continue to make these little flashpoints whenever it sees fit.
Yep. Just finally, Amy, Independent MP Monique Ryan today introduced a bill that would prevent politicians and senior public servants from working for lobby groups shortly after leaving Parliament. She says parliamentarians are not meant to take up positions with lobby groups, but it's something that's rarely, if ever, enforced. She's calling for something like a 3-year enforced gap between leaving Parliament and starting work at a lobby group. Here she is.
It should be understood before people take up a job here that you can't use the knowledge that you gain in this place for commercial advantage after you leave it. You can use the skills by perhaps working in a different field, but there should be a cooling off period so that there's no question of commercial advantage.
I can imagine a lot of people would say hear, hear to that.
Yeah, I mean, I think it definitely passes the pub test.
Yeah.
And in a lot of jurisdictions, there are rules in place for staffers of MPs, but not the MPs themselves. I mean, there's always been the argument that the MPs don't get paid as much as they would in the private sector, so that you can, you know, try and attract people who are into the public interest and serving the public good. And that's the reason why they have fairly high salaries, but not the highest. But of course, a lot of people leave Parliament and they want those high salaries and they're wanted for their knowledge. And Monique Ryan is absolutely right. This is why they're very attractive to the private sector, particularly these lobby groups. So probably do need some boundaries there.
Hey, Amy, just before we go, Speaker Milton Dick, the Speaker of the Parliament, made an observation today that seemed to be quite on the money.
I don't know why this is so difficult. When people are asking questions, don't interject. There's a lot of intelligent people here. Well, in the gallery there is. But order.
We're going to return to order. He was referring to the public gallery there too, not the press gallery, which I think is what also brought about some of those chuckles.
Indeed. All right, Amy, always good to talk. Thanks.
Thank you.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.